Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Evoke Therapy Programs podcast, and welcome back to our series where we're talking to our therapists at Evoke and sharing with you a little bit of their background, their approach, and giving you a taste of their personality. So today, we have a good friend
and very gifted therapist.
Chelsea, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Brad. Glad to be here.
So I like to begin with kind of your journey that led to wilderness therapy. Everybody's journey is a little bit different. So tell us a little bit about how you arrived at the point that you're at right now as a primary therapist at Evoke Therapy Programs.
Yeah, well, what initially led me to wilderness is I started outdoor guiding, and actually it was a fellow staff told me about wilderness therapy and said that he thought, you know, I would be a great candidate as a field staff, especially because I was really curious in working with the students and even the challenging group dynamics. So I stumbled upon it in that way, and started as a field staff in 2012, eventually became a field director, and that really solidified my, you know, I knew at that point I wanted to work more on the clinical side of what we do out there. And so I ended up going back to grad school and came back and worked as Matt Hoyt's assistant, and then eventually opened up my own group.
You left out that I had the privilege of working with you also,
And then I had a lovely 6 weeks with Brad Reedy out there where I learned everything about therapy.
Sure. No, I really appreciated, and I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, how we complemented each other when we worked together and how some of the work and some of your approach brought something to the work that I didn't do, but I'll ask that a little bit later. Tell us a little bit about who you work with. What's a Chelsea client look like? What kinds of issues do you find yourself working with often?
Sure. Well, I'm not sure how this worked out, but it seems that I get all the best clients, which I'm very fortunate but adolescent girls. So I work with adolescent girls. They tend to have anxiety, depression, substance use. Usually there's some challenges with school or some school refusal, self-harm. I would say in general, feeling disconnected with their family, their parents, you know, challenging family dynamics, co-parenting challenges. So really working with attachment and using that as a lens to work with my clients.
Tell us a little bit about your approach. What kind of models, theories do you gravitate toward? Do you use in your work? And that's, again, some of the work that we did together, I found that we were very complementary of each other. We brought different strengths to the table. Tell those listening how you approach therapy.
Well, I do actually want to tell a story about meeting you in the field. because I believe that some of our conversations and my work with you helped anchor me in many ways and how I see clients. And so I just remember being able to spend a day out with you in the field. We got in the truck together and you said, "I'm open to any questions you have." And I just said, "I want to be open and I want to learn as much as I can." And I remember you said, you know, therapy is really about aligning yourself with the client so that everything they do, everything they think, feel, and believe makes perfect sense. And I really do. I mean, that's my approach. So oftentimes when I find myself lost or I'm in the weeds, I go back to that. Like, how am I aligning myself? How am I seeing them? Am I understanding them? And I think so much of that is born out of what we talk about a lot, which is attachment. Using attachment theory. Right. And so, you know, right away, I find that's been so helpful for me because a lot of my clients, I find, you know, they've had a lot of different types of therapy. And so when I meet them, you know, right away, I'll say, you know, "I'm not here to fix you because you're not broken," or "I'm not here to tell you that you're wrong or bad. I'm here to listen. I'm here to understand you. And hopefully I'm using that perspective and giving it to your parents so that they can get to understand you too." And with that, you know, really, because I work with attachment, not only am I working with the student, but I really see my client as the parent-child relationship. And so that's a strong focus for me as well.
I remember our early days together when we were talking, when we were driving in and out of the field, there was so much of the time that you were just saying, you know, the rules of therapy, the things you had been taught that you should mm-hmm. do, and maybe some of the pressures that are put on all of us as therapists to fix the clients. That right. so much of what I found you saying and doing was there was so much that you already knew to be true that you just needed permission to think, to feel, to kind of express. Right. Those were kind of our early discussions. You do brain spotting, you do somatic experiencing also. Right. And what draws you to those models, those approaches?
Yes. Well, honestly, through doing my own work. So I found for me, you know, in working with therapists, I've done a lot of talk therapy, and I find that I can really avoid, I can be in my thinking brain or be in my cognitive brain, and I'm talking a lot, but I'm not feeling, I'm not experiencing. And so what really shifted that for me is working with a therapist who slowed me down, invited me to experience, you know, what body sensations are coming up for you as you're sharing this with me. And that really opened that door for me. And I became very curious. And especially with working, you know, again, going back to working with the students who they've had a lot of therapy, they've done a lot of talking, which of course is very beneficial. But I found for some of my students, you know, they could access their emotion or their experience easier if I tapped them into their bodies, you know, invited them to, you know, where do you feel that? Or if a client, you know, or if they have a hard time coming up with or sharing what's going on for them, I might mirror them and say, you know, I'm noticing your chest, you look really rigid right now. Your chest is tight and it seems like you're doing some shallow chest breathing, and just inviting them to look at that and experiencing that. I just find that often their body language is louder than what they're saying. So I'm very curious of what's going on for them in their bodies, as well as what they're sharing with me in session.
That was the thing that I wanted to share, is that when you and I were sharing a session, when I was first working with you, there was a client, young client, and not very mm-hmm. verbal. So it wasn't that it was lost in some kind of intellectualization. It's just that I don't think he had words for it. And I remember in one of his early sessions, I was finding myself maybe a little stuck, or the session was a little stuck. And as I paused and just left some empty space, you started to make some observations about how he was holding his body, how he was breathing. And I was amazed to hear him begin to talk about, to express mm-hmm. himself through his body. For me, because I don't have that personal experience, I've not done that work in that way, it was incredible to witness somebody kind of opening themselves up through this other channel that I had no experience with.
Right. Well, and to add to that too, it's awkward in the beginning. You know, I find that a lot of my students, they're disconnected from themselves. And in many ways, they're disconnected to their bodies. And so when I start to ask, you know, what's coming up for you, track your body sensations, what do you notice? Let's do a body scan together. You know, they'll shoot me this strange look, like, what are you doing? And then as I do this work more and more, and just to add brain spotting into that, you know, one of the things that I really value with brain spotting is that I just find that students, you know, as they do that work, because it is a, you know, somatic brain-based tool that allows for that processing, and the secret weapon, of course, is attunement. You know, so they're right. tuning into themselves while I'm attuned with them, and it can be powerful, and it just allows them to experience themselves, you know, experience their body sensations. And what's fun for me to watch as a therapist is to see them become more and more connected with themselves, their bodies, and it's less awkward. It's more, you know, they are more embodied. They are more aware of, you know, where is their anxiety? Where are they holding that? Or where do they experience joy? And it becomes more natural for them.
I think that was my favorite thing as I learned about brain spotting. Sometimes when people ask me to read a book or learn about a new technique, I've become a little bit skeptical, cynical about it, because it seems mm-hmm. so techniquey, so such a, you know, almost like a trick. But when I was reading about brain spotting, there was so much in it that was about attunement and attachment. And the fact that the person creating the model was so flexible. He was talking about, even as the book went on, about how he was learning as he was writing the book about new ways to approach things. So I really appreciate that about that, and saw the work firsthand with you doing it with our clients together. Do you find that, I mean, some of this sounds strange to parents and to students, first of all, to clients, but also to parents? Do some of the parents think it sounds too hippy dippy psychobabble when you first talk about it with them, or do you maybe give them some of the science and the research? What's it been like for parents to receive this modality?
I've seen, there's been several different reactions. Yeah, some parents will, think it sounds a little woo-woo. So I will send videos, I'll talk about the brain with them and try to explain some of the science behind it. But I think what's, the home run is when the students are writing about it. I find that to be fun. They're excited about some of the therapy that they're doing out there, and that's been helpful. Also, I think explain, most people have heard of EMDR. They're familiar with the rapid eye movement and the bilateral stimulation. And so sometimes I'll talk about brain spotting, how, it's more of a fixed eye gaze and how we use bilateral sound to access that as well. So there are some similarities that most people are familiar with.
So I want to ask you a strange question, maybe. You are one of those therapists who, to me, is naturally gifted. It seems like it just comes so easy to
you.
When you're out there and you're warm, you're connecting to the kids, you have a strong sense of yourself that you bring to the sessions that the kids recognize and kind of respond to. But I know something else about you is you hate public speaking. You're one of those therapists. When I've seen you, and especially in preparation for public speaking, it terrifies you, and you freeze in those moments. And it's always been interesting to me about how, and I can relate to it kind of in the reverse, about how sometimes people can be very natural in therapy and find public speaking very difficult. Do you have any ideas about why that is for you? What is it about that experience that you find so uncomfortable?
Well, I just wanted to add with that, what's a bit ironic, I guess, is I did a presentation on brain spotting, and then I actually did some brain spotting prior to deal with my own anxiety about presenting on brain spotting. So yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And when I think about it, I think for me, you're right. A lot of it feels natural for me to just connect with people. And that comes natural to me. And I think when it comes to presenting, it feels more performative, or I'm supposed to be smart, or I'm supposed to say these words very eloquently, and then I get in my head. And that's, that's some of the challenge. And so, yeah, my critical voice definitely shows up when I'm presenting or, doing this. So, yeah.
I feel really convicted by your answer, because I realize I've been trained my whole life to perform, and that's why public speaking comes a lot easier to me than one-on-one conversations. Therapy's fine, but I get very anxious in one-on-one social situations because I don't know how to be. So your answer is warm, of course, and natural, and kind of feels convicting to me. Another topic, or back to your therapy, why wilderness for you? What do you think is, I don't know if I want to say the magic or the science of doing therapy in a wilderness setting?
Well, I'll speak to that in terms of how it supports me personally as a therapist. And I think truly being out in the woods calms my own nervous system. I know, one of the beauties is as I'm driving out to the field, I might be thinking of all the emails I need to respond to, or, all the conversations I need to have with aftercare. So I'm thinking about all these tasks that I need to be doing, and I might feel a level of overwhelm because of that. And then the second my car hits the dirt road, it melts. I'm just present. And so once I get out there, that stuff doesn't matter. My job is just to show up and be present with my students. And I just find that it's easier for me to do that when I'm out in the wilderness, despite even some of the challenging elements that we're dealing with at times. So it supports me. And I see that being true for students as well. Even if they're uncomfortable, they usually will share that. There's a level of calm that they experience out there. I think also just the flexibility that I get to have. You know, I'm not bound to, I have to do all this work in 50 minutes. You know, if a client needs a 3-hour session, right, that's what we do. If I meet a client in the beginning and I can just tell by their body language that they might feel threatened by me, you know, they don't know me, they don't know how I might be judging them, and that direct eye contact can feel, you know, again, like a threat, I'll say, all right, let's go for a walk. You know, we're side by side, we're looking at nature together, we're walking together. And so I just, that flexibility, or let's build something, let's sculpt something, I really appreciate that, as well as, you know, the group dynamic, because of everything we do out there is experiential, you know, so we find that whatever challenges were coming out at home or coming up at home inevitably come out in the group dynamic. And so I get to work with that in a real time setting. You know, if there's conflict with peers, I'll invite them into session. So that's the piece that I appreciate too, just the creativity that we get to have, the flexibility.
I love that you start off that answer with how it calms your nervous system. I mean, it's so simple, it's so beautiful, it's so elegant to think of it that way, that when a person is upregulated, mm-hmm, or anxious, that the information, right, is going to be hard to come by for them, right? That's going to be hard to kind of incorporate the part of the brain that is thinking and rational and calm. And so the idea that of calming the nervous system first so that we can get that information in there, or they can incorporate new ideas, is so important. I think it's a wonderful way to explain it to a parent or somebody listening who wonders why the wilderness setting is important, why it's relevant to the work, yeah, of therapy. So thank you for that.
And Brad, what you said about, you know, the nervous system and up being upregulated, you know, even for myself, you know, wilderness provides that sense of calm for me. That's certainly the important work that I do out there with students as well, is I'm trying to help them create a sense of calm, because we know that if we're hyper aroused, we go offline. We're not processing information. So certainly as students start to develop a healthier relationship with their body, or they become more embodied, you know, a lot of that work is through, you know, them developing the tools to be able to regulate their own nervous system or to emotionally regulate. And so that's certainly a focus as well. You know, in our program, we talk about the mind, body, spirit aspect of the program. So oftentimes in session, we'll practice that, you know, we'll do the breathing techniques, or we'll do a guided meditation together just to help them experience what it's like to be in a calmer state. And I find that to be very helpful for students.
Yeah, I think I'm biased toward verbal oral communication. And what I noticed in working with you is that your eyes saw things that I didn't see, because you were paying attention, mm-hmm, to body posture. I mean, I'll pay attention to facial expressions and body, mm-hmm, posture if it's obvious and dramatic. But I noticed that you had a lens that was so subtle and so tuned to the smallest of movements, even the breath of a student. And that was something, again, that was a gift that you gave to me, to pay attention to, or to consider to be quiet and watch the body. So that was wonderful to have you training me in that modality, or at least that, yeah, being able to witness that approach. I like to always ask, because, you know, we talk about self-care, we talk about passion so much as a part of healing, a part of a complete life. What do you do to take care of yourself? What do you do for fun? What are your passions, the things that you, mm-hmm, do outside of work?
Well, it's probably not surprising that I need to be outside as often as I can be. And I think, you know, I live in Southern Utah, so being able to hike, I like to go hiking, you know, again, being outside definitely is a way that I feel rejuvenated. I enjoy biking, fishing, and also my relationships. You know, I'm someone that I need to feel connected to the people in my life. So I appreciate the flexibility with my schedule where I can be, you know, connected to the people that matter to me. I also do, you know, I have a therapist. I see her at least every other week to continue doing my own work, because I think that's important to me. And it's a way for me to be able to show up for my students out there and the families I work with. I also enjoy being competitive. So I love playing games, you know, card games, board games, ping pong, things like that. if I'm honest, I just enjoy winning. But I also...
That's what people mean when they say they're competitive. They just like winning.
Yeah, I like winning. I'm working on being a better loser. I still have some work to do around that. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't we all? Well, thank you again, Chelsea. Thank you for what you bring, what you bring to Evoke, what you bring to the clients and the families that you work with. Thank you for the playlist that you sent me while we were recently at a conference. Thank you for the warmth that you bring to our lives. It's a joy and an honor to be your friend and to work on the same team as you and to learn from you. So thank you so much. And thank you for joining us today and sharing a little bit of yourself with us.
Thank you so much, Brad. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me today.
All right, folks. We hope this is helpful for you and look forward as we continue our series and meeting the Evoke staff and therapists. Take care. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.